Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Hate groups are on the rise nationwide. Florida has the third most, and there are quite a few in South Florida. According to the newly released The Intelligence Report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, there's been a 30% increase of hate groups across the country over the past 4 years. Now, these groups are becoming increasingly radicalized, and as a result, we've seen more hate crimes and more violence, from a shooting at a yoga studio in Tallahassee to the mailing of pipe bombs from a man in Aventura. The Southern Poverty Law Center is tracking these groups and researching the causes behind their increased radicalization. Heidi Byrick is the director of the Intelligence Report, and she joins us now to talk about it. Heidi Byrick, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
What does the Southern Poverty Law Center believe are some of the reasons, the contributing factors to the expansion of hate groups across the country these last 4 years?
Well, there's a couple things that we would point to as being driving factors. One is just the existence of the online space, which allows people to be radicalized into extremist propaganda in ways that were never possible before in history. We've had quite a few notable extremists like Dylann Roof, who shot up that black church in Charleston, who learned everything about hating black people, in that case, from the web. So that's the first factor. And the second is that we lay a lot of this at the feet of the Trump administration, which has energized white supremacists by playing to issues that they get riled up about, being anti-immigrant, being anti-Muslim. Those kinds of things are also something that has contributed to rising ranks in these groups, as they feel like they have more of a stake in the political system and should get involved.
So we've seen this expansion. The report talks about expansion nationwide. But what have you seen in Florida, and specifically South Florida?
Yeah, well, Florida actually, and unfortunately, has been a place where hate groups have for a long time found a home. The oldest hate site on the web is actually in West Palm Beach. It's an outfit called Stormfront that we list as a hate group, and this is something that's been there since the mid-1990s. If you take Florida's population, which is obviously Florida is one of the three largest states in the U.S., into account, Florida still is sort of on the gradient to having more hate groups per capita than half of the states in the United States. So I think that's important. In terms of South Florida, you have a mix of all kinds of organizations. You have neo-Nazi groups like Stormfront, which I mentioned. You have the Proud Boys, which is this sort of thuggish street fighting group that describes itself as Islamophobic. You also have anti-Muslim groups in that area and quite a few organizations that we consider to be hate groups that are black nationalist groups.
So looking through the map, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, you see all these groups, you have them listed where they're, you know, what parts of the state, what parts of the country you could find them, and information about each group. But how many of those groups, I guess, would be the best way to ask you is, are active or are actually dangerous, a threat? And how many of them are just, you know, that that's a person or a group of people there, but they're just there?
It's a fair question. So we don't put groups on our list because they're violent. That said, a large chunk of the organizations on our group have had members who engage in violence, in particular neo-Nazi groups and skinhead groups. The reason we don't list on the basis of violence is because we have far too many situations where an organization whose members are just pumping out bigoted or hateful propaganda of some sort, anti-Semitic propaganda, that material ultimately becomes an inspiration for someone to commit an act of violence. Dylann Roof is a classic example of that. As I mentioned, he wasn't a member of a hate group, and he was radicalized online. But he was reading material from white supremacist groups that didn't have a track record of violence. They end up inspiring that kind of violence. So we're actually concerned about all the groups on this list, because all of them in some way target a population, whether it may be Jews, African-Americans, white people, and demean them and vilify them, and that can give someone an excuse for committing a hate crime. And that's why we do this based on ideology.
So the KKK has a long history in South Florida. And one of the interesting things is, you know, this past month we were, you know, for our book club, we were actually talking about a book called The Jews of Key West. And part of that history, they looked at how the KKK had its, had, I guess, not to say a resurgence, but they had a growth in the earlier part of the 20th century. And I'm wondering, have we seen a resurgence of that group, with the alt-right movement growing?
Actually, the number of Klan groups has been dropping really hard for the last 3 years. So, as you mentioned in the opening, over 4 years, we've seen a 30% increase in the number of hate groups. We've seen a massive decline in the number of Klan groups over that time. And the reason is this, that alt-right formation, these kind of younger millennial racists who have come about in recent years, they're really not attracted to the Klan's, I don't know how to say this, almost look or fashion. They don't like the hoods. They don't like the kind of weird symbolism and titles. Most of these younger racists are in groups that where they dress and they act like someone, anybody you might see, person in khakis and a polo shirt. And so we've really seen a massive decline in what is the oldest hate group in America, right, established after the Civil War, the Klan, and the one that's been responsible for so much violence over the years. It seems to have finally lost an audience.
Do we find white supremacist groups growing in areas where you have a large immigrant population, like South Florida?
You do. They are located in those kinds of areas, so they're definitely taking advantage of increasing diversity. But the sad fact is, the biggest white supremacist groups and neo-Nazi groups, whether it's the National Socialist Movement or something like Patriot Front, this is a group that puts racist flyers up on college campuses, you find them everywhere in the country now. That's the issue. They are trying to recruit in every single place that they can get into, with immigrant communities or without immigrant communities. And so there's just a lot of recruitment efforts on the part of these groups, and it's paying off for them by growing memberships.
Is that related to, you know, I guess, access online, social media, digital access, things like that?
There's no question. I mean, look, the rallies at Charlottesville, right, which led to Heather Heyer's death, were completely organized off a Facebook page and off of a thing called Discord, which is a gaming chat app. It's almost like you can't distinguish between online and offline activism. The two bleed into each other. These groups use the online space to teach people their beliefs and to set up events and to get people to their events. And then that ultimately spills over into real world activity. And then what happens in the real world, they take photographs, videos, and whatnot. They use that to start the cycle all the way over again. The web has just made it much easier to do everything that these groups are trying to do.
So does that mean that, you know, most of your tracking of these groups is online?
Yes. I mean, we have several researchers who spend hours and hours and hours on hate sites, but also on mainstream platforms like Facebook, like Twitter, looking at people who have PayPal accounts, seeing what they're selling on Amazon. And then there's also the hate sites themselves, where we spend a lot of time looking at material and posting. But we have to do both now, because you actually find these people in both places. It's not like they're confined to like a hate forum like they were maybe 10 years ago.
And yeah, the other thing too is, what about the dark web? I mean, how much time are they spending on just your regular social media sites everybody else is on, and how many of them are moving to the dark web to I guess hide some of their activity?
Well, that is a hard question to answer, because it's hard to track people in the dark web. You know, the thing about these organizations that you have to keep in mind is, they are actually, from their perspective, political organizations that are building memberships. And the dark web doesn't serve you well to do that. You need to be in the public space where people can find you if you want to recruit members and get membership dues. So our feeling is that probably most of the activity happens in the part of the web that all of us can see. And we know that it's very angering to these groups when they get deplatformed, when they lose a Facebook page or a Twitter account. And their anger at that happening, when they post hateful material that violates community standards or terms of service, shows how much they need access to the general public. It's like oxygen to keep them going.
And part of that helps their funding as well.
It's their funding, it's their membership, it's the size of their rallies. So although they might be communicating in various ways that we can't see through the dark web or direct messaging, at the end of the day, they can't build their ranks without access to the wider web.
I'm talking with Heidi Bierich. She leads the Intelligence Project for the Southern Poverty Law Center. The newly released intelligence report shows an increase of hate groups across the United States, 30% increase over the last 4 years, many of which are based here in South Florida. Now, the report details some of the political reasons for the expansion of hate groups nationwide, and, of course, concerns for future violence that they may bring. So, Heidi Beirich, it's important to discern how the Southern Poverty Law Center defines what a hate group is. So what are the primary characteristics that would list them or get them on the list for you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at the ideology of the group, the statements of its leaders, what its official positions are. And what we're looking for is, does that organization vilify, demean, consider lesser an entire other population based on their inherent characteristics? So what I mean by that is, for example, do they propagate ideas like all black people are more criminal or have lower IQ, or LGBT people should be thrown in jail for engaging in same-sex relationships, or Jews are masterminds behind some kind of conspiracy to bring immigrants to the United States and should be killed? That's literally what Robert Bowers, who shot those people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, believed. We're looking for that kind of a pattern. And the key thing is, does the group consider all the members of that other population to be lesser? This is actually almost exactly the way the FBI decides whether something is a hate group, whether or not the person targeted an entire group, used a slur against Jews or African Americans in an attack. You can find those two definitions on our website at splcenter.org if you want to look at them side by side.
And one of the things right now, as you know, there are three groups suing the center for labeling them as hate groups for defamation of character. One of them, and you talked about a moment ago, the Proud Boys Club. This was started a couple of years ago in support of the Trump presidency, and they've been linked to the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, and most recently, they provided security and support to Roger Stone following his arrest in Fort Lauderdale. What do you say in response to the organization justifying your label?
Well, I mean, look, anybody can file a lawsuit. Our view on this is that we stand by our listing 100%, that we think it's absolutely fair to call the Proud Boys a hate group, both by the statements of their former leader, who has now stepped down, Gavin McInnes. He actually said at one point, I think it's fair to characterize me as an Islamophobe. In other words, somebody who hates Muslims. And I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know in terms of the listing.
Is there any concern about the center being labeled as a partisan organization when you think about the fact that a lot of these groups are linked to conservative policies or conservative individuals?
You know, I get asked that question a lot, and I think to myself that, for example, where that's usually laid at the feet are some of the groups that we list as anti-LGBT. And the groups that we list in that category are groups that say things like gay men, all gay men, are more likely to be pedophiles and molest children. Or they're groups that advocate for people to be sent to jail using sodomy laws, basically some old school persecution against gay and lesbians. And I have to say that I don't understand how that could be conservative. In this case, what you're doing is simply lying when you're talking about pedophilia or molestation, or you're advocating for one of the most barbarous policies that the world is throwing off. And so I don't think of that as conservative. And I would guess that most conservatives don't think about upholding those ideas as being conservative.
The other thing interesting about this report, too, is that you look at lawmakers with links to extremist organizations. One of them is a Florida congressman, Matt Gaetz. He invited Chuck Johnson to President Trump's State of the Union address. Johnson is an avowed white nationalist that started the web platform WeSearcher, used for crowdfunding alt-right groups. Why is it important for the Intelligence Project to track these lawmakers' connections? And what does it say about potential influence on policy?
Well, I mean, this is where it becomes really concerning, because now you don't have a fringe group that might be saying hateful things, maybe inspires hate crimes or something like that. But once you get close to lawmakers, or lawmakers are hanging out with members of hate groups, it can affect policy, which is terrifying. It can also give a veneer of legitimacy to extremist ideas and groups. Chuck Johnson is a Holocaust denier, and his site WeSearcher was used to raise money, for example, for a neo-Nazi who ran a trolling campaign against a Jewish woman in Whitefish, Montana. You know, I expect more out of our elected officials, one, to denounce hate, and certainly not to have connections to groups like that. So when we see that kind of mainstreaming, it's really scary and unfortunate. We've seen far too much of it, frankly, in this administration.
Real briefly, if you could, I wanted to ask you about one particular case that very close to home here is the case of Cesar Sayoc. He was the gentleman who was arrested for sending pipe bombs to numerous members of the media and Congress. Do we know if he was connected to a specific hate group, or is he acting as an individual? This may go to the question of, are these groups becoming more violent, or is it just the message that's you know, I guess, influencing people to act out individually?
Well, we haven't found any indication. As far as I know, there isn't one that Sayoc was connected to any particular group. But he clearly was keyed in on messaging about Trump's enemies. He knew particular anti-immigrant groups. He knew he had targeted George Soros, the financier who funds liberal groups, who had been targeted by some in the conservative world as being sort of a menace to society. And most likely, he was just reading online propaganda, of which there's far too much of, that target these same individuals. The Coast Guard person who was arrested last week, Hassan, also had a hit list, right, that he had drawn up of, in that case, Donald Trump's enemies. We don't think he was connected to any groups. At least he's not in our files, even though he says he's been a white supremacist for 30 years. But reading this stuff online gives you all you need to know to come up with an enemies list like that. And that's why we're so concerned about the online world. I mean, a lot of the domestic terrorist acts that we've had, and have been a lot by white supremacists, the individual involved was not a card-carrying member of a group. They were just somebody who sucked in the information online and then decided to act on their own.
Heidi Byrick again leads the Intelligence Project for the Southern Poverty Law Center. They have a new report out that shows that hate groups across the United States have increased 30% over the last 4 years. By the way, they have a map, so you can look at state by state where these groups are, what those groups are, exactly where they're located. Heidi Byrick, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
I appreciate being on.
Well, still to come, we're going to change things up because, you know, a lot of heavy stuff to talk about there. And lighten things up and, you know, get the taste buds going. We're going to talk about a culinary competition here in Miami-Dade County.